Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. This episode was recorded live at the USA Football National Conference in Orlando. Joining me on the show is Coach Alan Rademacher. He's the head football coach at Valdosta High School in Georgia. In 2016, Coach guided his team to a state championship. We're happy to have him here on the show from the National Conference.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great,
good,
Coach.
Good to be here.
We've been touching base with you over the last year or so, trying to get you on the podcast, and you guys had an outstanding 2016 season, won the state championship. How many is that for you guys there now?
24.
24
is a big deal, isn't it?
How many you've been a part of, Coach?
I've just been there 8 years, so this was the first one in 18 years. So I've just been a part of one. In my career of coaching, I've been in four, and I've lost three. So it was the first one I've won as a coach.
That's a great feeling, wasn't it?
It was outstanding.
Coach, give us a little bit of your background and your start in coaching. How did it start for you?
Yeah, for me, I played college football at Presbyterian College, a little FCS school in South Carolina, and just loved football, couldn't do anything else. So I started coaching at a junior college, North Greenville Junior College, right when I got out. And we won every game that first year, and I thought I was a heck of a coach and bounced around and got back into high school and did that in South Carolina at Bowling Springs. And then I went to Georgia at Southeast Whitfield for 2 years, and then I guess my big jump in coaching for me was when I went with George Bobo to Thomasville High School in South Georgia, and we played for a state championship that year. George Bobo, of course, his son is Mike Bobo, that was the coordinator at Georgia and football player at Georgia, head coach at Colorado State. And so just that notoriety, playing for a state championship, all was really good for my career. And then went on from there to Peach County and was assistant there for 5 years and head coach for two. Got out of coaching for 8 years, chased the mighty dollar, and then got back in coaching as a good place in South Carolina Burns High School, where we had 12 Division I players that year I was there. Marcus Lattimore played for us that year and played for a state championship that year, and then came to Valdosta in 2010. I've been an assistant until 2016, my first year as head coach there. We won the state championship, so it's been quite a ride.
Yeah, absolutely. Coach, you pointed out, you're that young coach. You thought he knew it all, and I think we all have that point in our career where we're like that. We actually maybe don't know what we don't know.
Well, it's a pretty funny story. My first year, I worked for a guy named Mike Taylor at North Greenville. He was our head coach, and he said, Rod, before you get out of this business, you need to win them all 1 year, and you need to lose them all 1 year, and you'll find out on the coaching side, it's not a whole lot different. Well, first year we won them all, went into high school, went back to graduate school the second year, went to a school, Bowling Springs, South Carolina, and we lost them all. So I found out real quick it's about the Jimmies and Joes.
Yeah, absolutely. In those early years, what's a mistake you made as a young coach, and what'd you learn from it?
Well, I just think what you know doesn't really matter. It's what those kids know, and the more simple you can be. I got a little thing on my whiteboard in my office right now that KISS, keep it simple, stupid, and I think this is a simple game. They've been playing it for 150 years, and it's been 11-on-11. I think the simpler we can be for our kids allows them to really play.
Absolutely. Coach, as you look back on it, there's a lot of things, obviously, that go into your development as a coach and become part of what you do. What have you, from the people you learned from, sculpted together into a coaching philosophy?
Yeah, for me, it's from Coach Bobo and Coach Walker, and I've been with good coaches on both sides of the football. Bobo was more of an offensive guy, and Rodney was certainly a defensive guy, and I think other than keeping it simple, I think you better put an emphasis on your special teams. You better stop the run on defense, and you better not turn the football over on offense, and that's the three I really live by, and we keep things very simple at our place, but our place has so much tradition that we've got a lot of things that most other schools don't have. We've got kids that want to play football, and I know a lot of other places you got to kind of turn kids on, but I've been fortunate to be at some good places. But, if you play good defense, win the special teams, and don't turn the football over, you'll win a lot of football games.
Coach, I think the thing we've learned
as we start to become more experienced in this game. Obviously, the players matter. Maybe the X's and O's aren't always as important as we thought we are, but definitely the culture behind what we're doing is very important. It starts, obviously, with the head coach and that leadership. Talk to us a little bit about the culture you've developed at Valdosta.
Yeah, well, it's developing all the time. I think each and every year you have a different team. And, you know, we went out and won them all. Well, we were 14-2 that first year. You know, it culminated with a loss in Texas at the State Champions Bowl in December of last year. And then this year we go out and, you know, we go 4-7 and lose in the first round. And culture's not a whole lot different. The talent was a lot different. But we're developing our culture all the time. And we got something we call Wildcat Games that really guides our culture. We usually have around 30 seniors each and every year. And we divide those seniors into 3 seniors per group, 10 groups. And they draft the players on our team. We normally have about 120 players. They draft every player on our team, and we do something called Wildcat Games where we're basically keeping score on that kid each and every day. So what do we get points for? Well, we get points when we max out for going up in weight. We get points for being at school every day. We get points for grades. You know, you get 40 points for an A, 30 points for a B, 20 points for a C. You get points deducted if you miss school for any reason. You get points deducted if you miss a practice. You get points deducted if a teacher has to tell you to pull your pants up. You get points deducted if you get an email. So our kids are not only getting graded on Friday nights, they're getting graded each and every day. And, you know, when we get to spring football, we already know who our leaders are. And so I think that is the real meat and the potatoes of our coaching philosophy, of our culture there at Valdosta High School.
Coach, I've done some similar things with those competitions in the off season and the team drafting players. What do you learn? I know I kind of learned, but what do you learn from that draft about where your team's at and what those guys think about each other?
Well, it's a people business, and then for me, I think the most important thing is those teams where they really care about the other guy and the team part of it more than the me part of it are the teams that always overachieve. You know, I think we know pretty quick. Now, we don't draft until February 1, but we'll know by mid-February who our leaders are. We'll know what kind of team we are in mid-February. And I hate to be negative, but, you know, I was concerned last year in March about this football team because they didn't have the cohesiveness, they didn't have the care about each other attitude that we had the previous year. And so, unfortunately, you know, coaches, as you know, we have a crystal ball. We can see things, and we don't always like what we see, and so we try to address it. And I did the same thing last year. But I can tell you, you know a lot about your team 1 month into this Wildcat Games. And so, and then you try to address the things where they're deficient. But in the end, them caring about one another is most important.
Yeah, the games, and a lot of people have adopted these things. I know from kind of a managing your team perspective, there's a lot to learn when you really start to put points to things. You put that competitive opportunity out there for kids to compete really in all phases of what they do. Really start to see that. I remember Jim Tressel talking about, you know, you get what you manage. And that's what you have with something like this.
That's for sure. You know, you either teach it or you allow it to happen. And I tell our coaches that all the time, that what that kid's doing, it either was a taught or a learned activity or something learned from you or a parent or someone else. Or if he continues to do it, you've allowed it to happen. So it's part of your program. And I think keeping your thumb on those kids all the time, and they don't necessarily love it, but you know, our best teams have really gotten into the leadership part, because the best team, the team that wins that Wildcat Games, every member of that team gets a $100 gift card to Academy Sports. And so there is something at the end. But more importantly, I think our kids buy into the fact that the best teams on that team really are setting the team up for success. And so I think most of the things we find out don't really surprise us, but there's always some surprises in there. And you know, in all the staffs I've been on, we'd always, right around spring practice, we'd find out there would be kids that quit or kids that wouldn't come out, that were with you all off season, and you were surprised by that. You know, maybe they were killing it in the weight room and in the on the track, and then it came time to hand out gear for spring and they wouldn't show up. Now you know pretty quick where kids are headed, and it hits you. It allows you to head off or address some of those issues and maybe keep them with you where before you would have lost that kid.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a great concept. Something coaches should look into. I think the first experience I had with that was reading about, and I think it might have been in one of the AFCA manuals, clinic manuals, years ago, that Jerry Kill was doing that when he was at Southern Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
And that's,
yeah.
I think where a lot of guys got it from. And you know, then there was another article, I remember, I think it was being done at Kent State by Daryl Hazel.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's made its way around the country. But it's a great tool for, you know, to help build your culture. There's still a lot you have to do as a coach in deciding, you know, what it is that's going to be part of what you guys do. But just outstanding tool to understand where your team's at.
Yeah, I'd hate to go into off season without doing it nowadays. And ours changes. It changes every year. But we've got 10 or 12 things we're grading almost on a daily basis. And it takes a lot of work from a lot of coaches. I mean, I don't know if a staff with two or three coaches could really pull it off. But whether you have 10 or 12 things or two or three things that you're checking, I think it does help to be grading your kids all the time.
Coach, as you start to take what you've done in the offseason out onto the field, you know, there's going to be that teaching of the game that you need to do. And when you look at what you and your coaching staff are doing to teach the game, what are some of the best things you think you guys are bringing to the table?
Well, I think one of the new things that has changed, you know, with this Cochran and all those guys in the weight room stuff, is our tempo in our weight room really has changed a lot in the last couple of years. We used to get in there and we wanted to see how many people benched 300 and how many squatted, you know, over 400, how many would power clean over 300. And we won a lot of weight competitions and everywhere I've been. But, you know, when you get on the field, it's how fast you're doing that stuff, because every 12 to 20 seconds, that play starts all over again. And so our weight room now is almost like aerobics. I mean, it's going full speed all the time. I mean, our kids, we have four-man groups now, and our kids do a core lift. They do a movement. Then they do an auxiliary lift, and then they do an ab before they go back to that core lift. And that's one of the things that's really changed in our business. Just the way we go about that. And so that on a day in and day out basis, our kids really never get out of shape anymore like they used to.
With looking at that, obviously, if you're going to be that up-tempo, for lack of better words, in the
right,
weight room,
right,
you need to think a little bit about how you're setting it up, because you obviously don't want kids walking all over the place to get equipment and stuff. So how does that build into how your weight room's organized?
Yeah, well, it's a difficult deal. We're getting ready to go into a new school. We just dropped, you know, about $500,000 in our weight equipment just for the new school in two different weight rooms. So it certainly went into the planning of the new weight room. As far as how we're set up now, we just got to deal with it. But it does require you to have a lot more open space in your weight room than we used to. So we're putting money into things like turf and more just space rather than weights like we used to. So, and it requires you to have multiple coaches too. You know, I remember the day when I'd be in there with 80 kids, and the way we did it back then, I could handle it. But now you need six or eight coaches in there with you if you're going to manage all that. So it does require resources both on the equipment side and the labor side just to do it well.
How are you guys tracking all the work that they do in there?
Well, as far as that, we really hadn't we don't max yet. We try to max every 8 weeks. And we have something called Supercat that was developed from Valdosta High School back in the 70s before anybody else was lifting weights. But, you know, we measure that stuff, you know, on an 8-week cycle, and then we do our Supercat right before we get out of school for summer. And so it's a big deal for us. There's several areas where we measure, but, you know, every 8 weeks we just do a bench squat power clean and a 40, and that's basically it. So, and I'll tell you, the measurement part of it is really, we're trying to get more and more away from that. You know, a lot of these college guys, you know, the guy from Stanford and some other places, they're not even measuring kids like they used to. There's no boards or goal boards anymore. It's just more of just getting through, and injury prevention is the big deal now. And, you know, the weight room, and then, you know, the concussion stuff has really changed changed football more than anything in the last 5 years.
Absolutely. How have you seen that issue, the concussion issue, really come into play with, you know, how you're coaching the game and things from your youth program all the way up?
Well, it's certainly accelerated spread offenses in every level now, and just because of the way you have to practice. And it's certainly changed the way, you know, Georgia High School governs the way we practice. It's certainly changed the way we practice because we're only allowed 30 minutes of full contact in two practices a week. And then that third day, you can't have any full contact. It's all thud. So it's changed a lot about what we do, and it's certainly put us into thinking we need to be in a new offense. And then, you know, one of the vendors here at the USA Football Clinic, Guardian Caps, we spend a lot of money with those guys each and every year protecting our kids as much as we can. We have the best Rydell helmets we can get, and then we cover them with a Guardian Cap. And, you know, we had no – actually, this past year, and we didn't do it until last spring, but last spring and this fall, we had zero concussions during practice, and that was a big change. I would say we had double digits of concussions just 1 year ago. So we're trying to do everything we can to protect our kids as well.
Absolutely. Coach, when you start to take, obviously, this stuff out onto the field and game day and thinking about how you organize things, let's talk a little bit about, you know, your organization of game planning from, you know, beginning of the week to the end of the week. How you guys going through and, you know, what's your workflow for that?
Yeah, well, game planning is certainly offensively different. And I'm a defensive guy, but I let our offensive guys do that. And every guy's a little bit different. But for us, we start everything on Saturday morning. Our coaches are not required to come to work on Saturday, but we have every film broken down before we get to work on Sunday. We work from Sunday from 2 o'clock p.m. until it gets done. But all of our film is broken down. All the plays have been charted when they come to work on Sunday at 2. We have a staff meeting basically about the previous game, spend about 2 hours on that, and then we're into game plan mode from then on out. We're broken up, 6 offensive coaches, 6 defensive coaches, and we basically start our game plan then. And most of the time, that game plan is not complete until Tuesday of the game week. Monday for us is a little shorter practice. We do it before school from 6 to 8 in the morning, and it's base fundamental. It's a fundamental practice. And everything we do as far as going against plays from the next team's offense, we do that all in our base defense. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, we're all doing our 5 and 6 man pressures, and then we're doing our base and goal line defenses against other people's plays. So our game plan's never done until Tuesday, and we're evolving throughout the week. We put in stuff on Wednesday sometimes, and we put stuff in later than that. But I can tell you this, just like we started this segment with, we're more and more simple than we used to be, especially on the defensive side, because these spread offenses now get the ball out so quick that the 5 and 6 man pressure stuff, really for us, we don't do much near as much as we used to. Mm-hmm. Most of our pressure stuff is now to stop the run. So things have changed quite a bit in that respect as well.
And I'm sure you're seeing a ton of RPO.
Yeah.
Around the state. Guys always looking for answers on the defensive side. How do you stop RPO? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you see it on Fridays, on Saturdays more than anything. And, of course, we've been dealing with it at our level for the last 5 years. But it puts you in a man scheme. It puts you either man free, which everybody's playing now that I used to never play because I thought you just wasted that guy. But now a lot of these RPOs, they're reading second-level defenders, and you've got to be in a man scheme if you're going to stop them. You know, high school quarterbacks are so much better than they used to be, and then most of the reads in the RPOs are reading that those inside backers or those outside backers, and it requires you to – if you're going to cover the guy and still play the run, you better be in some type of zero coverage or cover one, which is man-free.
Coaching your program – how do you handle special teams? You know, people talk about it being a third of the game. I think special teams, you'll agree, gets a lot of lip service. How do you make it a focus for what you guys do?
Well, we do. We hit 2 special teams each day, and we spend about 30 minutes on special teams each practice. And then When we get to Wednesday, we go through every special teams. They get one more hit, but we meet on special teams. And we have a luxury there at Valdosta where we have a little bit more meeting time. It's a big school, big system. Our kids are all in the same weight class, and so we have time to meet with our kids. Every one of our kids have two weight classes. So we have one where we lift weights and the other one where we're watching film and we're meeting on special teams, offense and defense. So, one, we do it with meeting time. Two, we hit two special teams per day. You know, Monday's a punt day and a kickoff return day. Tuesday's a punt return and a kickoff day. And then we also put a live PAT field goal rush in on Tuesdays. And then Wednesdays we hit every one of them. And Thursdays we do something that's kind of unique in our business. We do a mock game on Thursday, which I know a lot of people do, but I know a lot of people still don't do. We run three offensive plays and we'll run a punt team out. And then we run three different defensive plays and we'll run a punt return team out. And we hit every phase of our special teams on a Thursday mock game in a period of about an hour. And so it's a real good check for us to make sure we're doing the right stuff with special teams. But, you know, Mondays when we watch film with our players of the previous game, because we don't bring them in on weekends, I firmly believe our kids need to be away from us for 2 days. And I think we need to be away from them for 2 days on weekends. So we bring them in Monday. We lift on Monday, and then we watch special teams as a team. We watch usually 10 to 15 clips of special teams as a team, and then we split up offense, defense. So we put a lot of time and effort in special teams.
Coach, with your special teams in practice, I know, thinking back to my early days, I remember some of the staffs it was, we just run out the whole unit, practice unit, and get off the field. Now, how much are you giving your special teams in terms of like maybe smaller group or individual type of skills?
Yeah, right. Pre-practice on Mondays is an install, special teams install. And we usually, it's about as a 10-minute period, and we'll change it up week to week as to what we do, because, you know, one thing about punt, that's going to be the same every week. Kickoff's going to be the same every week, but kickoff return and punt return, they're a lot different according to what the other team does. So, you know, no two punt formations are the same. So kickoff return and punt return have their own segment of practice, and that's a pre-practice on Monday and Tuesdays.
Coach, putting a focus back on you and some of your beliefs, and looking at, you know, the coaching profession in general, what advice do you have to the young coach out there?
Coaching in NFL. And if you can't do that, coaching college. Now, I'll tell you, if I had a son going in right now, I would tell him, you know, do your best to work for nothing and try to stay in the college game, because the financial part of it is unbelievable these days at the NFL and college level, that I just think long-term trying to stay at that level is very important. But for me, I'm 51 years old, and I've been doing this 25 years or more. I enjoy just the platform that I have for coaching. And, you know, there's a place for even young people. If they're not worried about, you know, the holy dollar, that I think my platform I have as a high school football coach is greater than any preacher in Valdosta, Georgia. I have really a chance to instill in our football players core values, moral values, Christian values that not many people in their profession have a chance to do. And so there's no amount of money in the world that could pay me back for that. That's something that, you know, I got a little saying on my wall that you only take with you that you leave behind. And I think that in respect to the kids that I coach and the kids that I deal with each and every day, what I give them will last forever, hopefully, because it'll be something they'll pass down to their kids. And so all the life build, the team build, the moral attitude that they go into each and every day with, I think will carry on long after I'm gone. And so my platform as a high school coach is like no other. Now, we'll never get paid like those college and pro guys, but that's what I take in each and every day.
Coach, looking back, you know, you've reached that level where you've won a state championship and your team's, you know, successful. You got those guys believing, you got them winning. As you look at that and everything you do in your program as football coaches, we do a ton. What's the one thing you would point to? You had to point to one. The one thing that gives your team the winning edge.
I think I don't know. It's hard to pick one, but the one that I'm most proud of is our character education. We do a character education in off season every Wednesday, and we go through a John Maxwell book each and every year. And this year is a little unique. We're putting our seniors in charge of it. But, you know, whenever I get, I don't read a whole lot. My wife reads every night. But when I read, I read motivational books. And John Maxwell is one of the best ones out there. And that, for me, is probably part of our program that I'm most proud of, because our kids go, the one we are going through this year is talent is never enough. And it teaches you about all the other things that are involved in being a great person and a great leader in society without having the most talent. Talent's only a small part of what you actually contribute to your business or the sport that you're in. And so I think our character education program is the one I'm most proud of.
Coach, it was great to meet you in person. Thanks for joining us here at USA Football's National Conference. Before we go, tell me a little bit about your impressions of this event and, you know, what you've seen here.
It's awesome here. I think the live field demonstration, which we're sitting very close to right now, is unlike any other clinic I've ever been to. Told you earlier that we've done a lot of business with the vendors that are here. They're very good to high school and college athletics. And then, you know, I'm getting ready to go see some really great speakers. So it's a great experience, and it's a great place to have it. I don't know that I'll go to the Pro Bowl on Sunday, but that's an additive incentive. But this is a nice venue and nice weather, and certainly a great event. I'm glad to see it come south.
Well, Coach, it was great to have you on the podcast. Thanks again for taking the time, and enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thanks, Keith. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.